is Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 7, season 15. We're nearly there. Stay with us. 3 more to go before we have our little break. Some people are already on the break. Some people are already in the Speedos. Ryan Champion, are you wearing Speedos? It's warmed up a little bit in Sweden now, hasn't it?
Well, it's gone from minus 27 to minus 8, but I wouldn't say Speedos are quite the order of the day just yet.
Just yet. Where is the break point for you? Because you're a Yorkshireman, so you know that's bordering on summer.
Yeah, it might just need to get a little bit warmer, but we don't really want it any warmer because the whole point of ice driving is it's cold. So
that's a fair point. I hadn't really thought that one
we're
through.
We're quite happy with things the way they are at the minute.
And who's in Sweden with you at the moment? Who's in the Big Brother house?
I've got there's Chris Ingram here, so it's just myself and Chris at the minute, and then the legend Terry Kirby arrives tomorrow.
Happy days. And in the other corner, we've got Trevor Agnew. Hello, Trevor Agnew.
Hello, Tony. Hello, Ryan. How are we?
It's great to have us all back. Jack's coming up a little bit later on. Obviously, he's got a far more important job than all of us put together these days, which he announced on social media the other day. So we only get him fleetingly now. He's a bit like having a headliner. Is the best way of describing it.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, say again, sorry.
We're not losing him, that's good.
No. He's with us all the way. He's with us all the way, but we have to go through his agent now. There you go. For those of you who downloaded last week's episode, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you've already got Dirt, I hope you're enjoying Dirt. If you haven't got it yet, stay with us. Of course, we might have a bit of a cheeky competition for you in a couple of weeks' time to win a copy. But we're just working on something at the moment. So don't get it just yet. If you feel confident you can win our competition, granted, it could be a false confidence because we haven't even gave you the question yet. So I think Ryan Champ can come up with that. Can you come up with something right for the competition?
I'm sure you can do that.
Right, boys, we're back to WRC action this coming weekend. We're not there, unfortunately. Our guest at the end of the programme, Bex Williams, has joined us before she flew to Rally Mexico. So we did a little bit of Mexico chat and we did a little bit of Monty and a little bit of Sweden. And to be fair, boys, she pulled me up on something that neither of you have during this podcast.
Okay.
I'll tell you what it is. Okay. I've kind of said that the first two events were a little bit of an anomaly and it kind of gets a bit more focused now. It's Mexico. It's kind of like a proper event. And she pulled me up. She went, no, you've done a disservice because there's still very, very tough events and everything else. And nobody else has pulled me up on it. She pulled me up on it. Trev, would you have pulled me up on it? I don't know whether you've been on while I've said that.
Yeah, I definitely would have pulled you up, but I haven't been on.
Right, okay, fair dues.
And I think we talked about altitude.
Yes.
It isn't a fair representation. So, that's not strictly true.
Okay.
You just don't listen to us, that's all.
Sorry, what did you say?
I rest my case.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much. One thing that is for certain, reading in the press over the last few days, there's been some nice quotes and stuff from Oi Tanak, right, that Toyota, and let's be honest with you, they are the mighty Toyota at the moment, seem quite confident that they've found some kind of solutions to this.
To the
altitude issues.
Yeah, I mean, and you would expect them to, wouldn't you? I mean, we've seen the car work pretty much everywhere now. Yes, they had problems last year, but yeah, I'm absolutely sure they've learned from it. I'm sure somewhere along the line they can do some chamber testing in the Toyota organisation somewhere where they put an engine in a chamber and simulated altitude and everything else. So I'd be surprised if we see a repeat of last year.
Trev, obviously you've not been with us for a couple of weeks while we've been kind of doing other bits and pieces. So it's nice to have you back. Obviously, finger on the pulse of all things WRC. Looking forward to this weekend. Can we see past Toyota this weekend, Trev?
Again, it depends on how well they've got the car sorted. That's 2 years in a row now that's suffered from the altitude. As Rai says, they have plenty of resources. We know Ford certainly used that resource and it worked really well last year. Remember, Ogier won it last year and Elvin was going quite well until he had his accident. So, Toyota are the foreign team, no doubt about it. You've got three very capable drivers. Yari Matti's got a very good road position, remember. And Tanak, of course, sweeping the road. So it's going to be interesting. Running front of the field. On this event, Ogier has won it three times out of the last four, I think. And, of course, in one of those years, he was running first on the road for 2 days. So It's just, I'm not quite sure Neville and people like that and Tannock have got their heads around running first in the road. So it's something that Ogier was very good at and still is good at. So yeah, but Toyota, you, as you said, is a strong team at the minute. If we can keep the car reliable, it's going to be hard to beat.
Trevor's has basically gone through everything I was about to say next. So goodbye. Road position, that's exactly where I was going to go. And I was going to cite the fact that Ogier had ran there. Now, you and I have spoke about this and what actually comes from running first on the road. I'm finding that line. But as Trev's just said there, Sebastian Ogier seems to have a method. He never liked it. Let's be honest with you. He was quite vocal about it, understandably, especially in the Volkswagen years, as it were. But he seems to have found his way around it. It's got to come.
Yeah, he has, and you know, I think it should be a good battle. You would, we seem to say this every rally, but Oitanek's been on fantastic form. The car's on great form, but the road position is a little bit of a leveler. So it'd be interesting to see how the first leap unfolds. As you said, Ogier was a master of running first on the road. He is the master of running first on the road. Very consistent, very smooth. He manages to do just enough normally to stay in touch through that the first loop when he has to clear the way. And, you know, I guess there's a few people already who are going to want to try and get their seasons underway that have dropped back in the points and Tannock sitting pretty. So, yeah, be interesting to see what happens at the start of the event.
Of course, Tannock's teammate, a former winner of Mexico, of course, Chris Mee. Trev, what's your take on Chris's early season form and how well he seems to have gelled with the car and, of course, with his new co-driver?
Yeah, he's had a good start. He's now in fourth in the championship now, so that's good for him. Last year it just didn't work for him. He had lots of little mistakes, especially the one on the last day where he lost his spot on the podium. If he can just tidy that up and make sure he's still in the race and doesn't get disillusioned if Mr. Tannock goes off at the speed that he can go off. Speed-wise, not going off. So, yeah, he should be up there. He's won the rally before. The car's capable of course, which will help out Mr. Ogier again. Make him be quick.
Do you think, I'll go to you, Trevor, and I'll come to Rye. Obviously, Chris has been blindingly fast, but do you feel, Trev, that he's tempering that pace at the moment while he's bedding himself in? Do you think he is now perhaps using his head a little bit more, realising by his own admission it's kind of last chance saloon?
I don't know that. I think he certainly wanted to get through the first two rallies. He was having a bit of a moan, I think, with road position in Sweden. If I remember right, Rye picked up on it on the last, certainly after Sweden anyway, where he was complaining, but Neville was behind him and taking time out of him. So he just needs to get his head, focus on the drive and get to the point where he's enjoying it again. We know when he gets to the end of the stage, a smile on his face, the times usually come. So if he can just get rid of all the rubbish going on around him, just focus on his driving, make sure the car's feeling good, he'll set the times and get them more consistent, you know, keep the pace going. But I think he's certainly seen what he has to do with Tannock, and he's got his work cut out, no doubt about it.
Right, you know, I guess the same point to you, really. You know, we've all recognised Chris is one of the fastest drivers, but currently his teammate is, you know, he's got an extra year in the car, Oitanak, at the moment, but he is just head and shoulders above most people at the moment, isn't he?
He is, and we've seen that momentum building with Tannock over the last few years. And Chris, like you said, he's had a solid start to the year. But, you know, this is the time for him to really shine. Mexico's generally been a strong event for him. He's got plenty of time in the car. He seems to have gelled well with Seb Marshall. And I think, you know, he will want to start to put some results together now. So, like you said, we know the team's good. We know the car's good. He's had a solid start. I think he will be looking to start getting results now. But like you said, probably wants to avoid mistakes at this time of the season as well.
One driver that I think probably needed a solid Sweden trip was Elvin Evans, and he says he's come away a little bit frustrated from Sweden, but I thought it was a really good solid performance from Elvin.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that four is going to be quick here. You've got Evans and Sunnerman. Both have got good road positions. I think they'll be figuring well on the first morning. The other person I think will be up there will be Danny Sordo. He was leading it at the end of the first day last year. Again, his road position is going to be brilliant for this event. And Mickelson as well, he's run down the order. He needs to put in an appearance as well and get back up there. But Fords will be quick with road position and what we saw last year. They certainly did a lot of work in Dunton in the climate chambers Ryan was talking about ready prior to last year. And we saw that car move forward last year. So it'll be interesting to see that on the first day.
Again, M Sport now, again, I think it was one of your favourite things to talk about, Trev, very, very early on. Obviously, Pontus did the first two events and, you know, God knows, you know, financially what that cost. Obviously, they've got somebody else now on the third car. I'm just looking now. I'm not even going to challenge this one. I'm not even going to. Where do I know that name from? Where do I know that name from? Let me just have a little look at this. He's done ERC. And he ran on a Skoda R5 as well. Lucas.
Yeah, I didn't say it. He's in an R5 car, surely.
No, he's in the other WRC car.
Are you sure?
I'm just looking. Just looking. Just looking. Sorry, yes, he is.
He's Ford's entry in WRC2 Pro, I think.
That's it. Yes, sorry, I was just looking through. So M Sport are only running two cars over there then?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, okay. I had it in my head that someone was going to be running the third car over there, and I thought it was him because I know obviously Gus is doing an event later on, and I thought he had an event in his program, and I got it into my head it was Mexico as well.
Yeah, no, WRC2 Pro he's in. He's at Ford's M Sport entry in that.
Yeah, there you go. Ryan Champion, I wanted to speak to you about perhaps we've touched on it a couple of times, but do you see, you know, and Trev mentioned it before, where Andreas's road position is this coming weekend? Do you see Andreas going out to try and make a point here?
I'm sure he goes out on every rally to make a point. We've covered this in the past. He, for whatever reason, hasn't been gelling with that car very well. He's had promising rallies so far to a point, and then they've turned a little bit for him. Obviously, Monty was going well, and they took the wheel off Sweden. He stayed out of trouble, but then just didn't have quite the speed to hold his position. So, you know, I'm sure he's desperate to show some speed again, not only to get a result, but just to show how fast Andreas Mikkelsen can be. And we know he can be. We've seen it in the past, but he just doesn't quite seem to have this car hooked up for him. And we talked about this, I think, last week, that Loeb has already made a couple of comments about that car doesn't quite suit him. So, we're back to this modern generation of World Rally cars we've talked about just don't suit every driver. They seem to have this small window of setup that doesn't put everybody at ease, and I'm sure Andreas Mikkelsen starts every rally wanting to make a statement and trying to, you know, not get his career back on track. I think that's a little bit harsh, but we've already seen him, you know, dropped from a rally this season. It is quite a crucial stage in his career, and you know, he's with a good team, with a good car, and he'll be desperate to turn things around.
Trev, What's your take on it? Because when we've seen obviously Jari Masi go through things, you know, he spoke about you know coaching and mind management and stuff like that. What are you seeing with Andreas? Are you seeing anything?
I just think he's not. He's the car doesn't suit his driving. He's tried to change his driving. He's been very vocal about that. That hasn't worked. I don't know what else he's tried or how he's getting his head around it. But you know, we've seen a precedent set here where They're going to go with their strongest lineup in Corsica, which means that Andreas isn't in the current tarmac. But we've also got Hayden Paddon sat on the sidelines. I'm sure if he saw Mr. Adamo's phone number flash up on his phone, he'd be getting quite excited about it. So is all of that will be playing on his mind as well. He needs to get rid of that distraction, just focus on how he can make the car go quicker. I think as a compromise around him not going to Corsica, he's going to get a bit more gravel testing. But again, is he the right man to be testing that car and making sure it's set up for him, or as opposed to if it doesn't work then for Neuville? Neuville could certainly drive it fast. So it's an interesting thing, and there's a bit of management to be done there, you're right.
Do you see Hayden being brought back, Trev? Do you think that's a viable possibility?
Well, he certainly did a good job last year as regards the team, and it's a focus on the team to win the Manufacturers' Championship. I would keep talking about Danny Sordo. Everybody talks about him as being a tarmac specialist, but he's as quick on gravel. Don't forget, like 2005, he was Chris Meek's teammate, and that was his first rally. I think it was Sardinia, his first rally on gravel, and he beat Chris. Chris, back then, he didn't really do much tarmac driving, so Sordo's quick on gravel as well, but of course, Hayden Paddon's there if they want somebody to do the job that he did last year, get podiums and things like that, then why would you not?
Okay, interesting. Rye, what's your take on that? Do you see Hayden making a comeback?
I'd like to see it, but I'm not sure I see it short term. I mean, I think they've got four drivers at the shuffling already. Do they need a fifth? And I think we'd like to see it, but I just don't see it just yet.
Okay. A couple of other bits and pieces before we let you go, Trev, because obviously we've got the headline. We've got one and only Jack Benyon joining us after the break. But can I get your take on Rally Mexico? How it's going to pan out?
As regards the top three.
Yeah, go on. Why not?
Let's have a go at it. And I think the winner is going to be. I'm going to go with. Sorry, I was just thinking I was going to change my mind here. I'm going to go with Ogier.
Okay.
And second, I'm going to go Tanak. And then third, one of the guys who run down the road a little bit, Elvin Evans.
Right, do you want to do yours now, or should we save it for Jack Benyon?
Yeah, let's save it for Jack Benyon.
Okay, so Trev's gone Ogier.
Yeah. Tanak.
Tanak.
Evans.
Okay. You've been pretty good at this in the past, it has to be said. Did you bother to do some homework? Did you get in any other business for this week, Trev, before we let you go?
A quick one. Do you want me to tell
you? Do your any other business, my friend.
I think it's quite exciting that Michael Fassbender's doing the Rally of the Lakes in Ireland. The actor, Hollywood actor, is coming to do it. Did you know that?
I didn't.
No.
Brilliant news. Of course, when you get people like that caliber into a rally car, it's always going to be good news for the sport in general. A fair play to the Rally Lakes in Killarney. It's their 40th anniversary, I think. And someone in the club, he grew up just outside Killarney. And so they've managed to get him over. He's already been over, had a look, driven a few cars. It looks like Paul Nagel will probably co-drive him. Not decided on what car he's going to use yet, but that's fantastic for the sport of rallying, I think.
Okay. Are you going to go over for a watch, Trev?
I won't be able to make it, I'm afraid. This time, I'm busy.
I need to speak to you about Deja Vu, by the way.
Yes.
I need to speak to you about that event.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's something for a podcast a bit further down the line. But there you go. Trev, thank you for giving us your top three, and thank you for joining us at the top of the podcast. We will catch up with you next week to see whether you're right or wrong.
Lovely. Thank you, boys.
Happy days. Folks, we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally, and of course, welcome back to our superstar. Fellow presenter that's been missing for the last... How long have you been missing for, Jack?
Just a couple of weeks, I think.
I thought it was 2 or 3 weeks. Obviously, you've got a new job now, so you're more important now than ever before.
I'm never too important for Absolute Rally.
Ah, come on, Jack Bengen. Me and Rye, we were only saying the other week, we thought, we wonder if Jack's going to come back now. He's got this high level job. What is your new job, Jack? Tell our listeners.
My new job is international editor at Autosport. That involves
international editor. Have you got one of those signs on your desk?
No, I haven't.
No, okay.
It's just a title. It doesn't mean much.
International, right? You haven't got a title like that, have you?
Well, technically I'm self-employed, so I can give myself any title I wanted.
I've gave you a few titles in the past.
Ryan's the International Man of Mystery.
He is the International Man of Mystery, it has to be said. He is the Yorkshire equivalent of Del Monte. I imagine Ryan in a white suit.
I don't sell a lot of fruit, though.
No, you don't, but Yorkshire tea.
Anyway,
we are massively getting sidetracked here, boys.
I did bring some Yorkshire tea with me to Sweden.
Did you?
I did,
yeah. How did that? Did you have to smuddle it, right? How did that go at customs?
I don't know. It was in my suitcase, you know. Nobody seemed to have an issue with it. So.
Okay. I just love the idea of, and I don't actually love the idea. The more I'm thinking about the idea of you smuddling something makes me, yeah. Anyway, moving on. Jack Bengen, as I say, you have been missing for the last couple of weeks. Trev's joined us at the top of the podcast. We've been debating a little bit of Rally Mexico. Of course, you're going to be covering it, I guess, for Autosport this coming weekend.
I'll be doing bits and bobs over the course of the weekend, for sure. Quite looking forward to the event, actually. The only thing wrong with it is there's no spastic work.
Well, we thought you might have an issue with that.
Of course I've got an issue with that. I've got an issue with any rally that especially Labour's not. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, isn't it? I think the story of recent rallies has been Toyota's form and them trying to string rallies together and keep their reliability up and match the level of performance they've got. But the problem they've got in Mexico is that they've had two very bad rallies there where they've had more reliability issues than they've had arguably at any other rally. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they get on. There's, Ori Tanak seems to have a lot of faith in his engineers who believe they've sorted the problem. So, but for me, the very, very interesting part of this rally is A, how the Toyota gets on in terms of reliability, and B, how Ori Tanak copes with being first on the road as well.
Well, we've just been talking about that a little bit earlier on. Now, obviously, Ori cites the fact that Sebastian Ogier has won the rally from leading it twice, but Trev pointed out that there's probably some mind management that goes into that, and Trev was a little bit unsure but perhaps whether Oit or whether Thierry's actually got that same level that Sebastian Ogier has got to manage situations where he's first on the road.
I think it's a difficult one because we haven't really seen too much of Oit in that situation, have we? So I think it's probably a little bit too soon to judge. I think Oit's a very cool customer. I think, mental sort of, well, mind games have never really been a problem for him. So I think, coming into Rally Mexico, it's going to be more how he deals with his own performance. I don't think there's going to be any sort of mind issue for Sebastian Ogier. For Oit Tanak. I don't think there's going to be any sort of issue there. I think we've seen him deal with very difficult battles and, he's always cool as a cucumber at the end of the stage, isn't he? So to me, I don't think that'll play too much of a part.
It's we haven't mentioned this yet, but I'll come to you first, right? It's not the largest field. Bex and I speak about it later in the podcast. It is actually quite a small field, so there's no national cars that are going to be tagged on the back, and if there's repeat stages and stuff like that. So stage wear, you would like to think they might be slightly better than what they've been over previous years with smaller numbers of cars going over it.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, like you said, a small entry. God, having a World Championship rally with, 24 cars or something, that's not ideal, is it, really? But, I mean, we have seen it before in various countries. Like you said, the stage should be relatively consistent from the first to the second pass. Having said that, it only needs... firstly, it will clean a little bit, as we said, but with the suspension on the World Rally cars as it is now, managed to pull huge rocks out from nowhere, so I'm sure it will be still a bit rougher on the second pass. But like I said, it's less starts.
Jack Bengen, we are getting quite a lot of noise from the Autosport office there. But We've just been talking about the small number of cars, and obviously the small number of cars that M Sport are down to two cars for this one, like Citroën, obviously more from a financial point of view of having no paying drivers. But there's a nice piece, certainly in MN, which I'm sure will lift over to Autosport with regards to Elvin and team who seem to work together before Sweden and to find some more, unlock some more out of that car.
Yeah, definitely. I think the most interesting part of that story for me was Elvin saying that they've done something radical to the car. I'm very interested to know what radical change they've made to the Fiesta, but Sweden was obviously a massive step forward for them. Brilliant performance from Sonnen and Evans in terms of stage times. Obviously, that didn't translate into an end performance at the end, but, that does happen. Are they going to be as competitive in Mexico? We saw them sort of benefit from people's liability in the past in Mexico, haven't we? We've seen some of the other manufacturers struggling with performance, whereas the Fiesta's usually been quite good in that sort of high altitude situation. So I think it's a good chance as any for Elvin and Timo to show their worth. I think both of them are under a lot of pressure, to be honest. I think Timo Sunderland's coming towards a point where we're expecting some good performances from him now. He's got some good experience in the 2017 car. And we've heard Elvin say this a lot, haven't we? We've heard him say, this next one's going to be my breakthrough. And unfortunately, it's not really happened for him in terms of sort of delivering consistent performances. So it's a difficult situation for M Sport to be in. We know the story with Sebastian Ogier leaving and then probably not getting as much forward backing as they might like. But at the same time, when the car is clearly delivering the pace like it was in Sweden, you have to follow through and deliver the performances in that sense. And that's why, you get paid the big money and why you're in the World Rally Championship. So for me, there's been a lot of talk and I'd like to see some action on the stages this weekend from those two and really see some good performance from the pair.
Right. I think what Jack just said there is, I can see where he's going with that, but are we still right to be managing our expectations with M Sport compared to what we were talking about before with what Toyota may be doing in order to get their cars not to be suffering from altitude and things like that?
I don't necessarily think we're managing expectation from a technical point of view with the Fiesta. I think it's just there's still drivers of, I mean, it sounds odd to say it, but inexperienced drivers, relatively. For sure, Elvin's now got the experience to be competing right front consistently. And I think the car is still there. I think if we did see Sebastian Ogier in that car this weekend, we'd expect it to be right at the front. So I think technically it's very capable. It's just a case of the drivers put in clean, consistent performances together. And as Jack already mentioned, Timo Sunnen, it's an important part of his career now. We saw that speed in Sweden, which is great because I think, we've needed to see more speed from him for a while. Elvin showed good speed there as well. So, let's hope that the road position does play into their hands and we can see an M Sport car on the road because they're still up against it this year. We know that. And I'm sure they'd like nothing more than to get a good result.
Jack, Trevor's already gave us his top three. Who do you think it is? Who do you think Trev's gone for?
I think Trev's probably on for Tanak to win.
No.
Is he?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll give it it. Right. Ogier, Tanak, Evans.
Ogier, Tanak, Evans. Okay. That's interesting.
So his rationale was road position for Elvin. So that's why he felt maybe somebody from a little bit further back, Pippin, just coming in onto the podium. We are going to do proper top threes. We're all going to do it. So can I have Jack Bunyan's top three, please?
You can. I also think Sebastian Ogier is going to win Rally Mexico.
Okay.
I think Jari Matti Latvala is going to be second.
Yeah.
And I think Chris Meek is going to be third.
Okay. Ryan Champion?
Well, I do think that it's a good opportunity for both of the other two Toyota drivers to shine for both Meek and Latvala, which makes it quite hard. I also think that Latvala, he's about due a renaissance. We could see some some good speed for him, from him. I can't speak. Will he win? Not sure. I am going to go with Neville, Tanak, Ogier.
Okay, so Neville, Tanak, Ogier. I'm going to go. You know how I like a left field, don't you, boys? You know how I like a left field. Okay. Right, I'm going to go Yari Matti, Ogier, Lappi. There you go. There you go.
I would like to have put Yari Matti up there because I do think there's a chance. I do think there's a chance, but let's see. I hope so. I hope you're right.
There's something. Do you know what? I thought the one you were going to pick me up on more was the Lappy one, to be honest with you.
Well, like you say, I think that Vala, chance that Vala could be up.
Okay. There you go. Jack, can we talk about a couple of other WRC stories that have happened over the last maybe 48 to 72 hours? Were you shocked? And I'm going to ask Rye about it because we not spoke about it at the top, really. Were you shocked about the story that was broke about Citroën supposedly pulling out of WRC if we don't go to hybrid?
No. Not really. I think if you go to any manufacturer in any major World Rally Championship at the minute and ask them if they didn't have hybrid regulations for 2022, would they still be in the championship? I think they'd all say no. So for me, not a big story there, I don't think. It's obviously shocking when a manufacturer comes out and says that they might consider leaving the championship. That's always a bit of a shock. But when you consider the background involved, for me, we're already... you only have to look at Formula E, the only major electric-based series out there, and how many manufacturers that's got to see. So that's where the manufacturers want to be. And, if we're getting to a point in sort of 2022, 2023, I reckon, where, got major FIA championships, that if manufacturers involved, they're all going to want to be hybrid or electric by that point, or maybe even starting to look towards hydrogen. So not a surprise to me at all. I think if you went to all the manufacturer team bosses and asked them, would they be in the WRC if there was no hybrid technology for 2022? I think they'd all say no.
Right, you coined the phrase which I liked yesterday when we briefly spoke about this. I called it a non-story, very similar to pretty much what Jack's just said there. Are you of the same opinion?
Wasn't it me that called it a non-story?
Yeah, but you said to use a phrase that I used.
Yes, exactly, because it is a phrase that you use. And I think exactly that. I agree with Jack, I don't see it as a story. I think it's probably fact. I mean, Toyota did say at one point they wouldn't come into the championship unless WRC considered hybrid technology, which they have come to the championship. But you can only think that Toyota is a market leader in hybrids, that there is some plan in place for that to happen. So we have to have some form of hybrid or electric energy. I think there's no two ways about it. Rallying has always been about developing technology for road cars. It's always been relevant to road cars. So inherently, we have to incorporate that. And like I also said, would it ever be a shock if they left the sport? We've never really known what the Citroën commitment was. Now they've got all the options, but they've still only got two cars. So it's still difficult to gauge there, isn't it?
Jack, if I can just come to you, I don't know whether you're still in the office there, but you're going to have to tell them to hush. Tell them you're on a podcast. is this also a very easy way, if it doesn't go perhaps hybrid, for Citroën to cite a way of moving out of the championship? Obviously, they're only running two cars at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting that the team that's only running two cars and clearly isn't focused on the manufacturer's championship is sort of making a bit of a deal out of the fact that they might leave no hybrid technology. I think it's a little bit of sort of look at this noise we're making. I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it. I think for me, they're not taking the manufacturer's championship seriously. So as it stands, I think their involvement is on shaky ground, isn't it, Citroën? They're competing in the WRC to win the drivers' championship, not the team's championship. So their involvement in the WRC for me is it's on very shaky ground, and something like this might be maybe not an excuse, but something they use to sort of justify their decision to pull out the championship in the future. Would they if the WRC announces tomorrow that we're going to have hybrid technology from 2021, you know, would Citroën stay? I don't know. There's been many stories about the amount of budget that they're willing to put into their team, and you know, obviously they're running two cars, they've lost Abu Dhabi, so there's a question there of money, and obviously we've not got the balance sheets in front of us, so it's not really fair for us to judge exactly how much Citroën are putting into their program. But I think it's fair to say that they're on shaky ground in terms of their involvement.
Right, moving on from that story, another story which was also featured in MN, but I've also heard this one. I think this one's been whispered quite a lot, and you're in exactly the right place to probably comment this, where you're sat at the moment. There was some concerns about, obviously, levels of snow and things on Rally Sweden, and that's brought about possible chats with regards to an event in Canada in 2023. What's your take on it?
Well, it's a discussion that we hear after every Rally Sweden that doesn't have true winter weather. You know, this isn't the first time, is it? It's been happening for the last 20 years plus that regularly leading up to the Swedish Rally, will there be snow? Will it be good winter conditions? Sometimes it isn't, and sometimes it isn't. And every time it isn't, we hear talk of either moving Rally Sweden or a second winter rally. Or even maybe a rally replacing Sweden. And firstly, I think that would be a shame because Rally Sweden has a huge heritage, a huge history in WRC. Actually, moving the rally in Sweden doesn't guarantee any perfect winter weather because we're here now, 400 kilometres north of Karlstad, and we had the same weather up here that the rally had. And even some of the ice driving in the Arctic Circle stopped last week because of plus temperatures. So, you know, that is the problem that we face with the weather the way it is now. Even if you moved the rally, you couldn't guarantee it. Would it be good to see another winter rally? Yeah, absolutely. Why not? And we want to be a world championship. Canada certainly has cold weather. It's probably more guaranteed stable weather, as it seems at the minute. And it's certainly no surprise that this is talked about, but it casts a little bit of doubt on the future of Rally Sweden, and I think it would be a massive shame if we lost Sweden from the championship.
Jack, the story's running in your sister publication, MN, of course, and that David Evans has been talking about it. Something which obviously I can relate to a little bit with it in the piece where they're talking about the logistics of actually doing the event and how much inland they have to travel. You know, 1,800 miles is a fair amount of mileage for any WRC event to get to its rally headquarters.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of questions. I think the first thing to point out with this story is that people shouldn't panic that this means Rally Sweden is getting cancelled, because if you read the quotes from the guy from Canada, from Keith Morrison, he says the WRC promoter approached him at Rally GB last year, so the talks with the promoter that asked Canada to bring this event forward, because their original plan was a 5-year plan, like you said, Tony, before 2023. The promoter was already asking them to bring this event forward before this year's Rally Sweden. So the events this year's Rally Sweden are completely irrelevant to this story. But at the same time, we have had a few. I think last year Sweden was good, but you know, this Sweden this year, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, I think as well, we had very limited snowfall, and that obviously always brings about the question, doesn't it? Everyone's always criticising at that point, but you know, it's difficult for the event to control the weather. Moving it further north, difficult logistically sometimes. Running it in Norway can sometimes solve problems, but there's many logistical problems with Sweden as well as Canada. So I think it's important to point that out, that people shouldn't panic that this means Rally Sweden's getting cancelled or anything like that. If anything, it's part of Ismaton's plan to have two snow rallies on the calendar. Whether we could have two snow rallies in a February period in the WRC, I'm not really sure if that would work, but that's obviously something we're looking at. And you know, we're a little way off this actually coming to fruition, but
we'll be hybrid by then anyway.
we might be, but you know, this Canada event, is it any more difficult logistically than somewhere like Chile or Argentina, Tony?
It is and it's not, right? Because I think I've discussed this last week, the equipment that's arrived in Rally Mexico as we speak, The long haul equipment will go on to, it'll be trucked over to Chile, and then it'll go from Chile by sea to Argentina, and then Argentina, some of that kit will come back to the teams in Europe, and some of that kit can, believe it or not, can be on forward and go into storage for Rally Australia. So that's the way it works logistically. So a standalone event where you're tying up kit for a considerable amount of time by sea, which Canada would be, and especially the on forwarding of, you know, 1800 miles, that's a lot. There's a lot of downtime there for kit to be tied up. And a lot of the teams, you know, you think about the teams that rent out cars as well, you know, customer type cars. If they're not air freighting them, whereas the main WRC cars are air freighted, but the R5 cars, the customer cars for a lot of the teams, will be sea freighted. And that's a lot of downtime for hire cars to be tied up, actually doing nothing. And that's where the cost, that, you know, that's another hidden cost which teams have to factor in, of having an R5 car that's stuck in a container traveling that they're not hiring out and get money from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point. I don't know if they would probably reshuffle the calendar and not, of course, go there and go straight from Canada to Mexico, I imagine, and hope, yeah, maybe that would shorten the cost a little bit. But yeah, I think we're a little bit of time off this yet, but I think it's interesting that, you know, this is being seriously considered by the promoter. This isn't the usual story of a rally coming out in the public and saying we want to be a WRC event. This is a story of the WRC actually asking an event to be ready quicker, because they're obviously that keen to get them on the calendar. So I think there's a few different aspects of this story that are a little bit different than some of the others, where, you know, you might get a nation saying that they want a WRC event. I think there's quite a bit more to it than this, but, you know, it's up to them whether they bring that timescale forward. And if they do, you know, I think it'd be fantastic if we could have two snow events on the calendar. I think that's a great proposition.
Dare I say, watch this space. Right, boys, moving on from the possible other snow rally. I'm going to come to you first on this one, Ryan Champion. We've been speaking quite a lot about Toyota and obviously the strength and depth of other teams, but Toyota's current lineup is very, very strong. But they've also continued to work with a Japanese driver as well, Takamoto Katsuta, who won an event in the Yaris WRC at the weekend, of course, with Britain's Dan Barrett alongside him. But one thing I found really interesting is the fact he was running Pirellis. Should we read too much into that?
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, he's fantastic result on Rally Sweden last year. That came on Pirellis, and whether there was any connection with that, I honestly don't know the story behind that, the logistics behind that, or whether they were just purely, you know, drawing a comparison. It was quite interesting that they did that. Yeah, no idea on that one.
Jack, what, any thoughts on that one? Because I miss, and we spoke about this time and time again, and do sometimes feel like a broken record, I miss having the two-time manufacturers battle. I know we had DMAC for a period of time, but, you know, that time seemed to be a bit more specialist. But, you know, in the heyday, when we had Pirelli and Michelin and mixed across the works teams, it added a dimension.
Yeah, tyre wars are always an interesting subject. They usually mean people throwing a lot of money at things, and you get unexpected results. So there's pros and cons to tyre wars, isn't there? In terms of Takamoto, the Pirelli is clearly the best snow tyre, and Toyota had no obligation to run any Michelins, because they're not in the WRC, so I guess they just wanted to put the best tyres on that car and see how quickly it would go, I guess. If you're going to choose tyres and you're going to spend a lot of money on tyres like they would have been, why not put the best ones on?
Absolutely. A little bit of admin before we get to everybody's any other business. I was fishing around and somebody put me straight. Lucky enough, it switched to a Citroen C3 R5 for 2019, so we'll see how he goes in that. And Jack, have you got any other business for us this week?
Have I got any other business for you this week? I think there's quite a few, actually. I'll narrow it down.
Go on.
I was very happy to see that we're very, very close to getting a closed road more fast in Scotland. So if you've listened to Absolute Rally before, you'll know I'm very excited about closed road rallying and the prospect of the Mull Rally and the Jim Park Rally. If you're unfamiliar with either of those rallies, just get on YouTube and you'll feel the passion and the fever straight away just by watching the YouTube videos, and I'm sure Ryan will jump in a minute because he's competed on Jim Clark. But yeah, we're very close now. I think we're less than 90 days away now from a law hopefully being passed, and hopefully seeing them all and Jim Clark Rally back competing in the UK. So there's a lot of rally fans out there desperate to get back out of those events. Jim Clark's not banned since 2014. More since 2017, so quite a few years without definitely the Jim Clark, and any year without Mull is massively damaging to that small island's economy. So it'd be great for both economies and for rallying in general that both of them events will hopefully be able to come back in a few weeks. So watch your space, and we'll keep you informed as to when all that happens.
Absolutely. I've done Jim Clark four times, I think it is, by the way, Jack.
Well, yeah, I forgot you.
It's fine. Ryan Champion, how many times have you done it?
I'm just adding it up.
It's going to be more than me, isn't it? Bound to be more than me.
2005, 2006. I've got to seven, I think. Okay. Seven or eight, somewhere in there.
There you go. What's your any other business this week?
Well, funnily enough, just sprung to mind there that what Jack said. I mean, you know, and we touched on this last week. The Jim Clark was an incredible rally, and I picked up on the Don Buckley Motorsport Twitter feed, actually. What's your favourite memory of the Jim Clark rally? And I think my first memory, and probably one of the best memories, is Don Buckley himself, when he was in an ex-McRae Rothmans Legacy, sideways into every junction, little bit of panel damage. He was just spectacular on that rally, Don Buckley, and a very good driver in his own right. So that was quite an interesting aside. But mine sort of links into something that we've been talking about this week. And, you know, it's rallies in the World Championship, where the next rallies might be, and where should the World Championship be going. And, you know, I think there's obviously a real will to get the World Championship back to Kenya, so we expect to see that. Japan's been talked about, we expected to see that in a championship. You know, there's been this on-off affair with China. In theory, it would be good because of the car industry, but the logistics of or the infrastructure for holding a rally seems poor. And yet, you know, still there's no mention of the USA. We talk about Canada. Surely, and this comes back to what you were talking about with logistics and everything else, and surely looking at a world championship, pairing Canada with the USA should be the answer.
It would work. Yeah, logistically it would work. The only thing I would say is that I'm not 100%, and this is just purely me speaking as an individual as opposed to anything that I'm involved in or anything I do, I'm not entirely sure. I know we have American listeners as well, and by all means, I know I'm probably going to get shut down in flames. But on the overall picture of it all, what the appetite is for WRC there?
Well, I mean, and that's true. You know, rallying is still a minority sport, but ultimately, we're trying to promote a world championship, and it's a world championship that doesn't go to the US, and the US is involved in rallying. And we see Subaru America putting a huge amount of money into rallying. So, you know, it just seems that, and you could, you know, dare I say the same for Canada, how much desire is there in Canada? But we're still seeing now talk of a Canadian WRC round. And, you know, I just think it's interesting. We saw Chile pop up almost from nowhere, really, into the WRC. You know, that wasn't necessarily just my point. It's like, is there any other rallies out there? Is there any other countries that we don't visit that aren't talked about that maybe should be involved? But to me, it seemed that, you know, if you're talking about Canada and, you know, looking at a way of making it effective, then we should be looking at the USA as well.
Folks, right. Yeah, if you're listening and you can drop us an email or whatever, and you're somewhere in the world where you feel you should have a WRC round, put your case to us.
We know there should be one in New Zealand. Yes, before we get to that,
Gary Boyd,
New Zealand's fantastic.
Gary Boyd, who hasn't been with us that much this season, although he has still messaged me. We will get some bits and pieces back for Gary Boyd over the next few weeks. But yeah, we knew Gary Boyd, as soon as he heard that, was probably going to send us a message. But quite rightly. Right, boys, that is the end of this particular bit of the podcast. So, Jack Benyon, you can go back to sitting behind your high-powered desk and your big leather chair and spinning around.
Just before I go, I think we definitely do a podcast on the WRC calendar and just basically argue between the three of us where we would move events. I think I could do a whole podcast on events that I'd move within the countries that they're already in, never mind adding new additions to the calendar. So I think we should get that done at some point.
That could work. That could work. You see, I could come from a completely different angle where I go, that doesn't work logistically, so you can move it wherever you like, but that just costs too much money, or it takes too much time to get there. So
that can be part of the argument.
After the F2 podcast.
Is that before or after the F2 podcast? That's a very, very fair comment, that, Ryan Champion. That's a very, very fair comment.
I didn't think we did Roundy Roundy podcast.
No, he was talking about... Yeah, thanks, Jack. He was talking about kick cars.
Oh, right. Oh, I've forgotten all about Roundy now. I've moved on.
still covering that grass tracking or whatever.
You were away on a grass tracking event, weren't you, the other week? Yeah. We forgot. So there you go. There you go. Jack Bennion, back next week, please. Ideally on Skype and not with your colleagues singing in the background. That would be lovely.
Okay. Yeah, no problem.
And Ryan Champion, you'll be back. Will you be back in Yorkshire? Will you be returning from...
I think I will be in Yorkshire next week, yes.
Okay, happy days.
Back in Yorkshire because he's run out of tea in Sweden.
There is some truth in that, actually. I'm down to my last couple of tea bags, but I'll try and strip through the next couple of days.
Folks, if you are listening, whenever you see Ryan Champion now and you've got tea bags with you, just hand them a tea bag, just so we can build up a bit of a collection. Just throw tea bags at him.
we're going a bit Partridge now.
Absolutely, folks. We'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Quarter, mid-lift test, 8-6 right, minus, tightens over jump, opens over 50, sharp left, tightens 5, 6 up left, crest, over 70, 5 right.
Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And we thought after all the nonsense that we speak at the top of the podcast, we thought we'd get somebody with a finger on the pulse, knows exactly what's going on, and doesn't guess the way we guess at the top of the podcast. So Bex Williams, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
So who's the person that you're going to interview then? Because it isn't me, obviously.
Tony. I can't do interviews, but you know what? I really get scared when people say, "Well, who are you going to?" I can't interview people.
It's a chat, isn't it? It's a chat.
That's all I tell people.
I always tell every driver, co-driver, anyone I interview, if they're like a bit nervous, it's like, it's just me. It's a chat. Come on, chill out.
Yeah, and that's all I've ever. And do you know what? I used to do a thing with we're getting sidetracked. See what happened? We get sidetracked already. When I used to do the TV coverage for British Rallycross back in the day, when we used to get the juniors on, they used to be so, so nervous. And I used to make sure I interviewed them all. But, and I'm sure they probably figured it out by now, they weren't recorded. But we did it. I did it to help them so they would get more relaxed with it. And that was my little gift to them. Whether they remember it, whether moving forward in their careers, who knows? But that was my little gift to them. I'm sure they were cursing me at the time because they never got on telly, but still, there you go.
But it's always a good thing to learn, isn't it? You know, being interviewed is I hate it. You know, personally, if I'm being interviewed like this now, it's fine. I can chat for Wales and happy St. David's Day to you. But if it's in front of a camera, I'm lost. I've got a face like rubber. It does all kinds of stupid expressions. I'm well aware of it. And that freaks me out. And I simply cannot relax. So I completely understand how people feel in that kind of situation.
Yeah. I try to get out of doing pieces to camera in the end, where I don't mind having the cameraman behind me and just basically you just see my hand. But I remember doing the opening pieces to camera, and I remember when it went out, and literally within about half an hour of one program going out, I got a text, as ever, from a good mate. How many times do you blink in a second? It was like, yeah, cheers, mate. Thanks for the support.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Make me feel good. Why don't you build my confidence?
Very self-aware. Thank you for that. Anyway, Bex, we've not spoke to you for about 8 months. And the reason why I'm so definitive on that time is because we're doing this on Skype. And it says 8 months ago you last spoke to Bex on Skype. So I know it's 8 months since you've been on. A lot has happened. But what we're going to try and do is condense everything down and get it into the 2019 season. Now, nobody's picked me up on this yet, and maybe you will. Yes, I know. Now, I've kind of been very flippant with regards to the opening two rallies of our WRC season so far, with regards to the fact that Monte Carlo in Sweden, I've called anonymy events, because there is such a lottery. I appreciate, and we all know there's a lottery to other events, but they are pure lottery events. And I've kind of cited Rally Mexico as the beginning of our, dare I say, proper season. Am I doing a disservice to our current world championship leader? Thank you. I knew I was, but nobody's picked me up on it. I knew you would.
Tony, I would say, yes, it is a disservice, because I would class, and a lot of people would class, the first three events on the championship calendar as entirely specialist events. So Monte, Sweden, Mexico specialist because it's the altitude, and you know, you don't get a level, well, you get, everyone's on a level playing field, they're all going through the same thing, but it's not until we get out of these first three that you actually start to see things maybe straighten out a little. So I would definitely class the first three events as specialist events. So Mexico, you know, has thrown up all kinds of issues over the years, and the altitude is a massive thing there.
I, to be fair, I've kind of tried to be divisive in saying that nobody's yet said it. So it's thank you for finally somebody taking the bait. You took the bait. Thank you very much.
Hook, line and sinker, you got me.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And listen, Rally Mexico, we know is, you know, the stresses and strains. I think I reflected in possibly one of our shallowest entries for a WRC round. But as you say, it's such a unique event within itself with regards to altitude. You know, we know the teams have had problems, obviously, keeping engines at full power. And has anybody come out? Have you heard anything that somebody, perhaps with our current spec cars, somebody found a way around this, whether there is a fix, whether there is a map that somebody will run that will stop what's happened in the past?
It will be interesting to see that. We'll find that out next week. But, you know, going on current or past years, you would say no. Everyone turns up there and yes, they've played about with things, they've tested various elements, but then they'll fall by the wayside with something else. We saw quite a few of the teams having overheating problems when we had the, you know, the newest version of the car the first time we went to Mexico. Those overheating problems continued into last year fractionally. So that was a big issue, because it is exceptionally hot in Mexico. We're looking at temperatures next week of 30 degrees plus out on the stages. You know, given with that, the fact that we are at altitude and there's, you know, the air is so much thinner and you can feel it yourself when you get off the plane, and to the fitness fanatics of our drivers and, you know, our crew members who run in the morning, they come back to the hotel and they're like, oh my god, there's just no air here. You know, combine all that factor and it, you know, it has serious implications for the car. And it'll be interesting to see if anyone has, you know, turned a magic switch and is able to counter that. I doubt it. They all just get on with it and do the best they can out there. And you talked about the entry. It is a small entry. And I always see this time of year when we come to Rally Mexico, there'll be quite a few people on social media going, well, why are we going there? Look at the entry. It's so small. But genuinely, it has been like this for quite a number of years now. They used to run a national event as well, so it took up a huge amount of cars. And we may had an entry of 60, 70 plus when you added the national into it. They decided to stop that and they stuck with WRC machinery, Group N machinery. And I don't think it's done any disservice to the rally itself. If you go there, if you are lucky enough to travel to Mexico and experience the rally and the visual spectacle that it is, it's well worth its place still to this day. And I mean, it started in 2004. I've not seen a better ceremonial start or better atmosphere and show that Rally Mexico can bring. And they're hugely innovative as organizers. They add different things in. They'll change things. You know, they were the only rally to essentially have the balls to incorporate an 80-kilometer stage into their itinerary. And that was a hell of a year.
Absolutely. Now, speaking from a point of view of entries and stuff like that, as you probably know, and as I know from my other life, as it were, that the costs of going to Mexico are very, very high. But of course, what we've now got this three event bank as well. So we go Mexico, yeah. Chile, Argentina, and that's all the same kit. Obviously the cars get flown back, but all the kits kind of already out there. So that's why Chile, even though everyone was kind of a little bit unsure, and obviously it's very exciting, we're going to have a new rally, but we've now got almost three events, not quite for the price of one, but you know, from a costing point of view, we've now got three very, very unique events in South America that stand alone as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Chile is a really exciting prospect. And, you know, we don't know a huge amount about the event itself other than what we've seen online, what we saw at the candidate last year. It's certainly popular in the region because there are a huge amount of spectators. So I think it's going to be quite similar to Argentina in that sense. Temperature wise, it's going to be similar to Argentina. It's kind of going to be around about 16 degrees in the day, maybe. Could be a bit of rain, could be a bit of fog. You know, it could be a fascinating event. And, you know, I think everyone is quite motivated by the fact that there is now a brand new event on the championship calendar. We're all looking forward to that.
Well, it's a great leveler, isn't it? That's the other thing as well, because the guys obviously do have notes. And, you know, some people will write a fresh set of notes. I think a lot of the crews probably wrote fresh notes when the 17 cars came about because they were so different. But, you know, we've got a situation now where we're going to an event. Everybody's on ground zero. Everyone, you know, every co-driver on SS1 is going to have a blank piece of paper, which I think is really exciting.
It is really exciting when you look at it like that. You know, we used to see in the past, many years ago, when we used to go to brand new events, it used to be Mikko Hirvonen who would always triumph at new events. He could never put his finger on why exactly, but he used to be able, obviously, to make great brand new notes first time around, get it right on the first pass as well as the second, and nail it. It'll be interesting to see who does it this time. You know, I don't think anyone is going to look much further already than Oit Tanak because he's got off to such an incredible start this season.
I wanted to talk to you about Oit because Oit Tanak, the movie, of course, is coming out in the not too distant future. I think something that I think you've contributed to as well. Now,
yeah.
We've gone through, we've talked about Oit quite a bit, as you can well imagine. I know you guys have as well for obvious reasons, but, you know, Oit's gone through the mill. You know, this isn't some overnight success.
No.
I was trying to figure out, I worked with Marco Martin Motorsport 10 years ago, I think it was, give or take, around the start of the Super 2000 program. And of course, Oit drove a Super 2000 car. And that's when it wasn't until I sat down and really thought about it. And of course, he was brought into M Sport. He was dropped by M Sport and everything else. Now, he seemed very shy and very unassuming and almost nervous. Now, you know these guys a lot better than me, but where I'm going with this is that seems to have gone full circle now. He still seems to be a quiet man, but so much so more self-assured.
Oh, my God, incredibly so. I mean, when I first met him, he barely spoke, you know, sitting down to interview him and, you know, The tough nuts are the ones, you know, you really like to crack. When they don't give you much in an interview, I am then, there's something inside me that's like, right, you've got to keep going with this one. You've got to keep going and get them to chat. And that was my mission. As soon as I met Oit and realized that he was, it's a shyness. It's also, you know, he still doesn't have, you know, a huge amount to say effectively. He keeps himself to himself. He talks a lot more now than he used to, but interviews would be along the lines of yes, no, maybe. And that's all I got. But there was a definite sea change. He'd come back to do Rally Sweden with M Sport. I think it was a one-off event maybe, or whether he'd had a partial drive that year. I haven't got my notes in front of me now to remember what year it was. But I remember turning up in Karlstad and getting ready to interview him and thinking, right, okay, you know, let's have all the questions on hand because he's a classic to just stop talking. And you're like, right, what was I going to ask you next? And I like to bounce off drivers. I'm listening to what they're saying. And that's the key thing, isn't it? With any chat, with any interview, you're listening to what they're saying and you're responding to them. But when somebody doesn't give you anything, it's very difficult to bounce off that person. And instead of me going to look for him in the M Sport area, he came to me. He came over to me, shook my hand, said hello. And I was really, Tony, completely taken aback because this man had been very insular and very, you know, I'm here to drive. I don't particularly want to talk so much. I'm, you know, hello, hi, but let me get on with my job kind of thing. And here he was coming to me for a chat. And then we had an interview and I thought, what? where have all these words come from? Where have you been hiding yourself all these years? It just started to pour out of him. Come the end of the event, we are in the Scandic Hotel in Karlstad, which is famous for its after party. It used to be, not anymore, but it used to be. And I'm there, Oit's there, Richard Milliner is there, Malcolm Wilson is there. We're all having a little drink, it's a couple more people. And Oit disappears off. 5 minutes later, he comes back with a tray of tequila shots for us all. And Malcolm turns to me and looks at me and said, "What have you ever seen such a change in a boy?" And we had a massive chat about how much he changed, how much his personality had come out, how much he was prepared to give more to the media, to journalists, to everyone around him. Not just the media, but anybody in the team. He was prepared to talk more. And Malcolm was completely taken aback by it all, as were we, but loving it because we felt then starting to see the real Oit Tanak. And I love his personality. And I've known him many, many years now. And I think sometimes he might come across as a bit of an arse at stage ends when he doesn't say much or he'll contradict people or whatever. And some who are new to rallying, who don't know his story, might think, oh, God, he's miserable. He's unresponsive. He's this, he's that. But I have him right up there at the top with one of my favourite people on rally.
Do you think, and I don't know whether it appears to have, and it comes from probably the friendship or teammates with Sebastian Ogier, they seem very tight. You'd know this.
Very.
Yeah. You'd know this better than me. Obviously, there's the story of what happened with the notes last year and things like that. But I find that really surprising. And what I mean is by that is that all these guys go toe-to-toe together. And I still believe that the biggest challenger to his crown is Oit Tanak.
Yeah,
and I don't know whether it's keep your friends close and your enemies even closer. I don't know, but I must admit, I they were very close as teammates. Obviously, that friendship's remained, and obviously, rallying is very, very different. As you know, I'm preaching to the choir. I know, and the same with our listeners. That you know, it's not like racing where perhaps it's difficult for those friendships. The very, very tight. But I genuinely believe that he is the man in to use a racing term, which is a hate racing term, in pole position to take that championship.
Yeah, he is. He's at his height right now. Well, there's probably higher heights to come from Oit Tanak, if I'm completely honest. But he's very much in control of his power right now. He knows what he can do. He knows if there are any limitations. He tries to push past them all the time, which is why we see these incredible speeds. The Sweden win, plus the 5 points on the power stage as well, very similar to what Jari Matti did 2 years ago. I thought it was a stellar performance from Oit Tanak all weekend. And he told me in the final FIA press conference that not at one point during the weekend was he on his limit, which is scary for everyone else. And I mean, OK, it could be a bit of psycho babble to freak the others out. I tell you what, funny moment from the press conference, and I don't know if this is up online and whether you can see this up online. I haven't actually had a look yet, but when the boys came in and they all sat down, I kicked off with Oit and said, you know, brilliant win, and you took 5 points on the power stage as well, just to hammer it home how good you are. And Esa-Pekka Lappi turned to him and he went, "Shit, you took 5 points on the power stage. You probably have to beep that, Tony. Sorry,
no,
Tony."
It's fine. No, it's okay. We allow the odd one.
Esa-Pekka was like, "You did that too." Whew. And he was like, you know, proper idol worship at the side of Oit Tanak, because he hadn't realized that Oit had taken maximum points as well on the power stage. So that was quite a funny moment to watch. But I think they're all aware how good he is. And I know Ogier is, but their relationship goes back quite some time, and we'll all remember those famous images of Ogier hoisting Oit on his shoulders back in 2016 Rally Poland, where he'd missed out on the win, and Oit at the final stage end just got out of the car and he walked away into a field and off on his own. Or Janneke, I think his wife, was with him, and Ogier just kind of went running after him to give him, you know, words of support, basically tell him. I asked Seb what he'd said to him, and he said, you know, I basically tried to said, you are so good, you know, don't let this affect you moving forward. And then, you know, Oit is coming back on Seb's shoulders. Seb's lifted him up and carrying him on his shoulders. And I think there's a really big mutual respect between them. They're very similar in that they're both exceptionally driven. They work very hard. Seb is uber professional, and Oit has learned a lot from him being in a team with him. But they're also similar in terms of their families as well. Seb has a young child, Oit has two. You know, I think they're similar in lots of different ways. There was a moment last year, actually. We were in the media zone in Finland, and I was heading over to interview Seb, and Oit's wife was in the media zone. Jannica was there, and Seb saw her and went straight over to have a chat with her. And there were some French fans who were lining the fence watching the media zone, and they started shouting at Seb in French, or, you know, stop flirting with the ladies type of thing. And he had to turn back and say, "Oi, this is Oit's wife. I'm not flirting with the ladies." So, you know, they get on well as, you know, family to family, as well as driver to driver.
Is there a we're writing off perhaps, you know, a Thierry Neuville here, perhaps a little bit too soon, but
I'm not writing anyone off this season. I have to say, Oit Tanak is definitely strong, but I'm not writing anyone off at this point. We saw what happened last year.
This, I know, absolutely. But and this is where I don't know what your perception is. Obviously, in the service part, we spoke about this quite a lot, and obviously, you know, the story obviously about Andreas being benched behind Hyundai for Corsica. Yeah, they've got such a strong driver lineup, but I just question, and we've questioned it on the podcast, there's an analogy I'm trying to come up with, as ever, too many cooks spoils the broth. Is that it? Yeah, it is. I finally got it right. There you go. Right. Too many. So I'm just thinking, you know, Hyundai have got such experienced drivers now. With Loeb, with Andreas, with Thierry, obviously. With Danny coming in and out of the team as well. But, you know, they're very experienced guys, so they'll have their take. Now, you know, Sebastian Loeb mentioned, I think it was on Monte Carlo, he was struggling a little bit with the chassis. And you just wonder how much input are all these guys going to have, and how many in different directions is this car going to be pulled in? Whereas with Toyota, you feel it's kind of Oit's car being built around them almost now. And as much as probably Yari Massey would shoot me down in flames for saying that, it definitely has that feel. And that's where I feel that, ironically, it could be a little bit of the undoing of the Hyundai guys.
Well, we'll find out, I think, by the halfway point of the season. It was interesting to see, the Andreas Mikkelsen news come through this week. There was a bit of chat in Sweden, and I think a lot of people were maybe expecting it. You know, when you have someone like Sebastian Loeb, who you can bring in for the tarmac events, where, you know, maybe they feel, and they obviously do feel, that Mikkelsen is not their strongest bet there, they've gone with Loeb. Hyundai are going to do absolutely everything this year to get the championship titles. They've lost out now for too many years. They were so close last year to both manufacturers and to drivers, and they missed them. And this year, it's going to be a far more brutal year from the team in terms of decision making, I feel. You know, we will see decisions like this pop up. They may not be popular to some people, but the team believe, and they're going to do what they need to do to win that both championships. I think Thierry mentioned he will have a little bit of more of an aggressive tone this year in what he delivers. But I believe the team will as well. They'll be far more brutal with decision making on who does what rally, who does what when. They have that power. They have the budget. They have those drivers in their pocket, essentially. They can move their chess pieces around where they want to. Will we see more brutal decisions on events? Use of tactics. You know, we see teams, you know, use what's in the regulations. Will we see more with Hyundai with that this year to maximize point scoring for whoever is leading the championship? Well, Thierry's their best place right now, second in the championship. I believe we'll see more of that.
I said this on our podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I said, for the good of WRC, do we need Hyundai to win the manufacturers this year?
Oh, I wouldn't say for the good of WRC we need them to win the manufacturers this year.
I just fear if we don't, I don't think
they're not going to go anywhere. If that's what you're worried about. I mean, any team can pull out at any time, but we saw that with Volkswagen. So you can never actually 100% say that. But at the same time, they could win and disappear.
Yeah, true. True. No, that's very true.
It's kind of the same either way. I mean, for the good of the championship, it really doesn't matter who wins, because we've had a variation of manufacturer winners now, which has been fantastic to see. And, you know, I was delighted for Toyota last year for them to claim it after 2 years, when a lot of people had written them off before they'd even started in the championship. For them to come through, deliver wins and deliver a manufacturer's title, I thought was really special for them. So, yeah, who will it be this year? We've only done two events, and it's so hard to forecast what could happen, because last year was such a roller coaster, such a lottery with every event, which made everyone want to watch all the time, because you didn't want to miss what was going to happen next.
Speaking of watching, because we're now at the end of this week's podcast, so if obviously all channels lead to all live, where you will
absolutely
be.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we were Facebook Live as well on the Thursday morning from the Shakedown. So Facebook Live on Thursday morning for Shakedown of Rally Mexico, and then Thursday evening we kick off with the Super Special in Guanajuato on All Live, yeah.
I'm glad you pronounced that, because I attempted it four times before we started recording this and decided I was going to let you say it. Bex, listen, we'd love to get you back soon as ever, because it's been way too long. So I'm going to let you go, because you've got a flight to get. And folks, that is the end of this week's podcast. You know where we live, @Absolute_Rally on Twitter, facebook.com/Absolute Rally. All the old episodes, absoluterally.co.uk. We're back same time, same place, in your little podcast hole next week.
Absolute Rally. Powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.